You can be my wingman anytime. Bullshit, you can be mine. Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Narrative First Podcast, the weekly podcast where story is always king. I am your host, Jim Hull, the voice of Narrative First, and this is episode number 37, Discovering Dramatica and the Genesis of Narrative First, Part 1. Welcome, everyone, to the Narrative First Podcast. This is the podcast where we discuss all things having to do with Dramatica and story structure and story analysis, using the Dramatica theory of story as our baseline for attempting to understand what makes a great narrative a great narrative. For those of you who are regular listeners, you will want to know why I'm not continuing with the part 4 or part 5 of generating dramatic tension within each act of your story. We are in the process of moving the Narrative First offices to a new location over the next 2 weeks, and I thought this would be a perfect opportunity to lay down some groundwork for people who are new to Narrative First or new to Dramatica, a place where I can point them to and say, here, this is the podcast that you should start out with. So I'm going to break it up into two parts. For those of you who are regular listeners, you'll probably recognize a lot of this. You might get something new out of it. I'll add some new things here and there. A lot of it will be a refresher course. I know that for me, personally, I listened to tapes of Chris and Melanie talking about how they created the theory and things that I've heard over and over again. I listen to it over and over again, and I always end up getting something new out of it each time. So I'm sure even if you are a regular listener and you know everything about there is to know about Dramatica, you will possibly get something great out of these two podcasts. So yes, I am going to split it up into two different parts. In this first podcast, we'll go over the vault articles. And in the second podcast, we'll go over the articles. And the difference between the two is really simple. There was an article that was written in December of 2009, which was called Writing Complete Stories. And this was my first serious attempt at explaining why the Pixar films were so much more popular and so much more effective than the films that we were making at DreamWorks. And I don't know if Andrew Stanton or Pete Docter have a copy of Dramatica or if they've read anything about it. It was great. And during the move, I found a sheet of paper from CalArts 93, and it said, these lists of people should call John Lasseter, which is great because it was... And they would look at your film, and then they would say, okay, we want to talk to this person, this person, this person. And my name's on the list, and I could never get a hold of them, and I was too scared. Otherwise, I probably could have worked on all those great films. But instead, I created Narrative First, which I'm actually more excited about than getting to work on, like, Toy Story 3 and Inside Out and all those great films. I mean, they're okay, but Narrative First, that's where it's at. And so that article in December of 2009, Writing Complete Stories, that was my first legitimate article where I felt like, okay, I actually finally got across something that I feel is really important and that I want to communicate and share with everyone. Everything prior to that, that's what's in the vault section. So I have a bunch of articles from the Story Fanatic days and even from the Daily Dramatica days that I still think holds value. And in some respects, it's really good for someone new to the theory, because it doesn't quite get into all the complications and the subtleties of Dramatica that perhaps my latest articles get into. Those vault articles, those will be the subject. Those are articles from about 06 through 09, and those will be the subject of today's podcast, this section. And then starting in 10, the first 2 months were spent kind of gearing up, and I finished another vault series, a vault compilation called Main Character and Meaning, which I'll explain in a little while. And then starting March, the first week of March, started writing an article one a week. And then 2010, that was the first year that I wrote an article a week. And that's when I came out with the first book, Story Fanatic 2010, which I'll leave a link to in the show notes if you want to download that or purchase it. And that's when I really felt like Narrative First, what eventually became Narrative First, actually hit its stride. My impetus for this drive and to do an article a week came from a rather heated discussion that I was involved in, a 30-page forum discussion about the difference between the main character and the protagonist. Now, the Dramatica theory of story makes a clear distinction between the main character of a story and the protagonist of a story. As I explained earlier, the main character is not actually a character, it's a point of view, it's a perspective. So the point of view that is most personal, the one that we, the audience, are supposed to adopt, that's the main character through line. The protagonist is the character, or I guess I should say player, that serves the function of pursuing the story goal in the overall story through line, in that overall story perspective, the objective perspective. A lot of times that character is the same, and that's why a lot of times people, you know, use them interchangeably. And in fact, people in the past that have used them interchangeably perhaps don't have it as well defined as the Dramatica theory of story does. But I always feel like Dramatica just does an amazing job of explaining the difference between the two, and it seems like within the last two decades that people are slowly coming around to adopting this idea. And the forum discussion started out with somebody had linked to one of my articles in the vault and had a problem with it, and everybody thought I was crazy, and then I went on to explain myself over 30 pages, and I think I did a pretty good job to some professional screenwriters. I think it was on the Done Deal forums, which is a place for curmudgeon-y screenwriters to go and write and complain about stuff. That's what it seems like to me. It could be a really great place, I don't know. It'll tell you how to make millions of dollars, I guess. Wait, I shouldn't say that. Okay. It just seemed a lot of people were grumpy about story theory. So that was where I started to get motivation. You know, if you want to talk about people who are motivated, once I had that inequity in place, getting across the Dramatica theory of story, I had a ton of motivation. If you want to talk about the blend between desire and ability, tons of ability, lots of desire, and that just magnified, the two of them magnified each other, and I was ready to go, and have been ever since. And then the other thing that happened around March 2010, that's when we began working on How to Train Your Dragon, animating on How to Train Your Dragon. And it was great because, like I just explained, it was a long time since I had worked on a really great story. And this was a fantastic story. And I was so excited, I wanted to make sure that every film after then would be just as great. And a lot of the articles, the purpose behind them was to communicate why films like How to Train Your Dragon, why they're so good, and why you're so attracted to them, why you remember them, why they're so meaningful to you. All of that, I wanted so badly to continue to work on great films like that. I wanted to make sure that people got the story right first, instead of waiting until the last second. And eventually that's what became Narrative First. And what I want to do is I want to make this a living, breathing podcast, these two parts. There's no reason why I can't record these two, and then a couple months, if I come up with something great that I want to add to it, I can just open up the podcast, slip in the extra little chapters here and there, republish it, and then everybody will be able to reap the benefits of my work. So I'm going to make sure that if there is something that you feel like I've missed that has really helped you out, or that you think somebody new to the theory would love to understand, or that you wish you had known from the very beginning, feel free to write to me at narrativefirst.com/contact, and I will add it once we get situated in our new location. First off, I want to talk about the history of Dramatica. For those of you who don't know, and that'll be the last time I say for those of you who don't know, because I'll just assume that those of you who don't know, and those of you who do, do. Dramatica came out in 1994, and it's a theory of story, and the basic idea of Dramatica is that every complete story is an analogy to a single human mind trying to solve a problem. So stuff like character, plot, theme, and genre, those aren't really things that are talking about real people. You might have heard in other screenwriting books or screenwriting gurus or from other screenwriters that, you know, you're supposed to write living, breathing, three-dimensional characters. And I'm sure when you actually go in to write, you will actually write better stuff if you do take that approach. But when you're actually looking at the ingredients of story, what story is actually made up of, those four big groups, character, plot, theme, and genre, they're actually just analogies to what goes on in our minds when we set about to solve problems. So character is the motivation of the mind. Plot is the methodology of the mind, how it goes about solving the actual problem. Theme is closer to evaluations that the mind undertakes as you go through the plot motivated by character. And then genre is the purpose of the mind, and that's a marked difference from anything else that you've probably heard about genre, where it's actually more like the personality of the mind. In last week's podcast, we talked about Field of Dreams and how that had a completely different personality to it, and it was more than just mopey Kevin Costner walking through the cornfield. It's more about how the relationship between the main character throughline and the overall story throughline and the conflict that they explored, that relationship between those two throughlines is what sets the personality of that story and the structure of that story and what gives you the different feeling than what you're used to in most narrative. So when it comes to this model of the mind, an analogy to a single human mind trying to solve a problem, there are four through lines. There are the overall story through line, the main character through line, the influence character through line, and the relationship story through line. And there's a feature on Narrative First called the Throughline Thursdays. Throughline Thursdays is not easy to say, where every Thursday we go through and we take either a film, a television show, a novel, whatever it is that we're looking at, and describe what the four through lines look like for that particular work. You can find that at narrativefirst.com/throughlines. And it's a great introductory, a great visual introduction to how those domains actually work in a story, and for you to start to understand that while you may have all kinds of different conflict within a certain point of view, there will be one particular arrangement of points of view for all four through lines that feels the best, and that's when you know you've come across what that story mind is actually trying to communicate. Chris Huntley and Melanie Ann Phillips were fellow students at the USC Film School in the late 70s, and I believe early 80s, and they worked on some films together, some student films, realized that they weren't any good, not them themselves, but the stories themselves weren't any good, and then they went off and did their own thing for 10 years. During that decade, they would get together and say, well, you know what, I think maybe this is what's happening in story, and I think this is what's happening in story, and they would kind of lightly develop a theory of story, but not really put it down into concrete concepts or concrete words. And then somewhere near 91, Stephen Greenfield, who was Chris's partner at Screenplay Systems, they're the creators of Movie Magic Screenwriter and Movie Magic Scheduling and Budgeting. If you worked on any films in the 90s, you know what that is. They got together and he decided, or he asked, hey, maybe you guys should put together all those ideas you have, and we can come up with a story structure software. And over the next 3 years, the three of them ended up creating the Dramatica Theory of Story application, which debuted in 1994. Now that's a really quick history of Dramatica. Last year I recorded a video of Melanie, two great videos. One is her describing where she first started to get ideas of the theory of mental relativity, which is what's actually underneath all of Dramatica, at the swing set in her backyard. And I actually went to her childhood home, and she showed us the place where she was actually swinging on the swing set and couldn't tell the difference between the sky and the ground. And it's a great 6-minute video of her describing that. And then there was another class that she gave at Wright Brothers, the creators of Dramatica, where she went through Dramatica past, present, future, and progress, how things are changing, where she describes the entire process of how Dramatica came to be. And I really can't do that video justice. I mean, she did a tremendous job of going over each and every aspect of where it came from, what she was going through personally, and how that related to the creation of Dramatica. And it's just a great 2-hour video, which I will link to in the show notes. And you can learn all you want about Dramatica. But the one thing I can give you more information on is where Narrative First came from. Now, I discovered Dramatica probably, late 1995. This was very soon after the internet was created, and I remember looking through, just searching, because I was always interested in writing my own features and writing, and I've always enjoyed creative writing. In fact, during this move, I've discovered my 6th grade writing assignment for creative writing, The Mystic Medallion, with illustrations by Brendan Drisling, my best friend in 6th grade, who could really draw really cool D&D type characters. And what I'm going to do after the move is go through the Mystic Medallion and analyze it through Dramatica and see if I had anything figured out in the sixth grade. I'm sure there's probably some things missing. Probably main character is probably missing a lot. But that'll be interesting. So, yes, I was searching, reading about screenwriting, and I came across this idea of the main character growth. And Dramatica splits a character arc into two separate concepts. One is the main character resolve, and the other is the main character growth. And the main character resolve is the binary switch, you know, how a character is at the beginning compared to how they are at the end. You know, have they changed their resolve or have they remained steadfast? And then the growth is the development of that change or steadfastness. So you put those two together, the resolve and the growth, and that's what most people think of as character arc. And I was really struck by this idea of the growth of it either being stop or start, because every other screenwriting book I ever purchased, I used to take several trips down to the writer's store in Santa Monica, and in fact, that's actually where I found Dramatica. I remember walking in and asking what kind of new software they had, because I loved screenwriting software. I thought it was the coolest thing. I always wanted to make my own, which I probably should someday. And they pointed me to Dramatica, and I thought it was great because there were boxes that you could drag characters onto, and it felt a lot like playing Dungeons & Dragons, but with my own stories. So I purchased it, having no idea what I was getting myself into. But prior to that, I had read online this idea of stop or start, and I loved it because there were no caveats to it. At the California Institute of the Arts, the character animation department, whenever someone would go up to show their scene to their teacher, you know, their week's assignment, there would always be tons of caveats. Well, I didn't get this done. This part isn't quite right. I'm going to work on, you know, this acting over here and this dialogue change here. I'm still working on it. And everyone would set themselves up for the negative feedback by trying to cover all their bases and trying to give on all these caveats and exceptions. And it wasn't until Dramatica and this idea of stop or start where finally I found someone who had no caveats and no exceptions, and they basically laid out how narrative works without any kind of backtracking, a very objective take on it. You know, it's not in this story, you know, these sequences are turned around, in this story it really doesn't work the same, but if you look over here, that's where that concept actually is. For Dramatica, the thing that struck me and why I was so taken by it was the fact that it was very objective. It objectified the writing process and had no caveats or any kind of exceptions, because they were so confident with what they were presenting that they really had no reason to cover themselves, because it's all taken in there. And it's funny because growth is one of the hardest things to wrap your head around. And not the hardest thing, but it can be easily seen as either one way or the other. But just the idea that that concept in story exists for all narratives was super compelling to me, and it began a lifelong journey into learning as much as I possibly could about the theory. This idea of a story being an analogy to a single human mind trying to solve a problem. The biggest problem most people have when they first come to Dramatica, and actually when they've been using it for several years, is to think of these characters as actual people, because that's what they're taught in screenwriting class, that's what they're taught in other screenwriting books or any kind of other paradigms. This idea of creating three-dimensional characters. And it was interesting because last night we had the analysis of the pilot episode of The Americans, which is a TV show on FX starring Felicity as a KGB agent, which apparently has been out for 4 years. I thought it just started this year. I guess they finally got their advertising worked out. But during the course of that analysis, Chris explained this notion that main character through line and influence character through line are actually misnamed. That it's actually not a character. The main character through line is not a character. And the influence character through line is not a character. They're actually points of view. That's why, I mean, it's easy to see in the influence character, because you can think of the example that they give of Christmas Carol with the ghosts, where they all the ghosts and Marley share the same perspective. They share the same approach towards solving problems. So while that perspective is attached to different characters or different players, the through line itself isn't about one character. And that gets people into a lot of trouble because when they ask about the influence character through line, they wonder, well, okay, does that mean it's about the struggles he or she is going through? Is it about the influence he puts upon the main character, he or she puts upon the main character? Is it about the influence that they put upon everyone else around them? The answer is yes, because it's all about the perspective. So the main character through line and the influence character through line are actually perspectives, they're not characters. And for an example of a collective main character through line, you can look to Stalag 17. We did an analysis of that last year in, I believe, October of 2016, and I will leave a link in the show notes, where we discovered or decided that the main character through line actually consisted of everybody in that particular room of the concentration camp. They all shared the same perspective and were all being equally influenced by a singular influence character. But really, when you take a look at story, the other problem people get into, which I was really happy that Chris addressed last night, which I've been speaking about on Discuss Dramatica, is the idea of the relationship as a character, seeing that relationship as that the point of view. Just like the main character through line and influence character through line are perspectives, the relationship story through line is also a perspective. And separating out and getting away from the he said, she said stuff happens when you start seeing it more as a point of view that has problems within it. So it's taken me 20 years to get to a point where I finally understand that. And the interesting thing about Dramatica is that you will dive into it, you will understand everything there is to know about it. About 6 months into it, it's about the average, it might be quicker now, you start to hate it, and you want nothing to do with it, and you put it aside, and you decide that was a complete waste of time. And then it sits in the back of your mind, and it keeps working there, and keeps cogitating. And then 4 or 5 months later, you come back to it, and suddenly you understand all the parts that you forgot. But then simultaneously, you forget the parts that you understood. And then that cycle goes on for the rest of your life, because our minds don't want to know how it actually works, and Dramatica is all about explaining how our minds work. And the only reason we ever get motivated to do anything is through blind spots and not understanding what's actually motivating us. So once you start to understand the mechanism behind how those blind spots work, you start to get rid of all your blind spots, so you either go meditate on a mountaintop for the rest of your life, or you completely ignore parts, and just when it comes to writing, you're going to forget those certain parts that you're trying to hide away from yourself, and then that's when you turn to Dramatica to help you out. So for the last 20 years, I've been attending every single Dramatica users group analysis. I've tried to write my own screenplays, written a couple here and there. Using Dramatica, I always use it from the very beginning. A lot of people will say that it's strictly an analysis tool, and that's not true. It's actually a creation tool, and you can actually use it to quickly formulate the story that's in your mind. So around September of 2004, I began a character animation blog called Seward Street, and this was the beginning, the heyday of blog publishing, and I thought it was completely nutso that no longer did I have to worry about agents reading screenplays, or managers reading writing, or getting approval from somebody else to actually publish something. I could just sit there and publish whatever the heck I wanted, regardless of whether or not people were reading it, and that completely blew me away, and it was so exciting. And what I began with was a character animation blog called Seward Street. Now, Seward Street is a street in Hollywood. That is where 4 animators from Disney set off to work on Bambi by themselves. So Walt said, hey, I want you guys to start working on this feature, but I want you to kind of develop it on your own and get away from the hustle and bustle of the main lot and do your own thing. So they set up shop on Seward Street, and it was Milt Call, Frank Thomas, Ollie Johnston, and Mark Davis. And these were kind of like the 4 pioneers of Disney animation. Great artists that I completely looked up to and wanted to emulate in my own animation career. And I used Seward Street as a way of putting up all the stuff that I had accumulated over the years, my years at CalArts, and audio recordings, and all kinds of stuff that I had discovered that I thought was really interesting and compelling. Well, everybody in animation started to create their own blog, and eventually by 06, it was really crowded, and I had run out of things to say about animation. Just, you know, once you talk about a bouncing ball or squash and stretch, or once you've gone through all that stuff, you've just had enough. And there really isn't much more you can say, and you know, you can only post a milk call scene from rescuers so many times before everybody's doing it. That's when I approached Chris Huntley, one of the co-creators of the Dramatica Theory of Story, and I asked, what would you think of a Dramatica blog? And I called it Daily Dramatica. And every day I would sit down and just put a blog post up about Dramatica. That lasted maybe a couple months, 2 or 3 months. And eventually I realized the daily part of it was going to be too much. And I didn't want to have to use Dramatica in the name. So I switched to Story Fanatic. And Story Fanatic had its big start with my screening of War of the Worlds, Steven Spielberg's War of the Worlds. I was working at DreamWorks at the time. I had won a contest on the studio lot that you could go watch the premiere of War of the Worlds in Spielberg's private screening room, which was super exciting to me. And so I went there, sat in the middle, there's a little popcorn vending machine there, and got to watch the entire film. And by the end of it, I was so disappointed because Deus Ex Machina, right? And I went home and typed up my first analysis, which essentially spoke badly about the film, which I felt bad about because I had actually won this contest. But still, I felt compelled to explain why I thought it could have been better, because in the past 10 years preceding, I had started to learn about this narrative theory that I thought really could help people figure out their stories before it was too late. Working in the animation industry, the films take about 3 to 4 years to make. There is a story there at the beginning, and they work it and work it and rework it and rework it and rework it. And they eventually get to a place where you gotta start working on it because there's schedules, and the next film's gonna start, so you gotta go get this one finished. And sometimes they start without even a complete story, and they won't figure out the story until the last 3 months, and then everybody has to scramble around and figure out the story, and once they get that worked on, then everybody has to spend 7-day weeks finishing up the film so that they can get it, all the story changes done in time. On How to Train Your Dragon, in 2009, we actually spent, they had changed the directors, I believe 12 months prior to the film being released, and then we spent the next, once they got the story figured out in 3 months, which is amazing, they had that figured out, and then we had 9 months of working 6-day weeks, which was crazy, crazy difficult, for anybody to go through. I mean, it was a blast because you knew the film was great, but still it took a toll on the family. And that's when I started to realize that there could be a way to save a lot of heartache and definitely save a lot of money if people would just get the story right first. And so I was going to do storyfirst.com, and somebody already had it. And then I looked up a thesaurus and I thought, whoa, narrative first. And actually I think that actually really gets it down and seems more special than just story first, narrativefirst.com. Hooked that up in 2013, which was the same time that I left DreamWorks. And by that time, I had been writing consistently articles pretty much from March through November, writing an article a week. It's about 40 weeks of just things that I learned, either in the user group analysis class or a film that I watched, something I saw on HBO, anything that struck my attention as being worthy of putting up into an article, I would start to write these articles. What I'm really trying to do with them is to challenge myself and not rely on the same old information. Back in 93, I convinced the head of the character animation department, Bob Winquist, who's super genius, great person, to pay for me to go see a Robert McKee course. And it was great because he paid for it, and it was the whole weekend, and I was pretty much the only student there. The rest were all agents and writers and people who didn't take notes but were always on the phone and talking to other people. I was the only person actually taking notes with a notebook, and somebody even ridiculed me like, oh, you must be in school. And I actually paid attention to everything he said and wrote down about positive and negative charges. And on the third day, he goes through Casablanca and breaks down a bunch of scenes. Okay, I think it's been 30 years now. No, 20 years now, and he's still doing the same thing. Still doing Casablanca is the third day. I think maybe it's the third and fourth day now. And I can't imagine, one, wanting to go back there and listen to that again, and two, doing the same thing over and over again. So with each article, I'm trying to explore different avenues and different films and different stories, but through the lens of Dramatica, and to always constantly challenge myself to come up with something new so I'm not relying on the same old examples. You know, it's really, really hard because you use Star Wars a lot, you use To Kill a Mockingbird a lot, and so I keep trying to break free of that so I can have new, fresh examples to draw from. I know another screenwriting guru, she uses Cagney and Lacey episodes, and it's like, well, nobody's seen a Cagney and Lacey episode in 20 years. How could you possibly use that as your basis for what makes a great story? As opposed to like, oh, hey, I just did a full analysis of Manchester by the Sea, and do you want to know why it's such a great film and why the tragedy works the way it does and how Lee's personal problem is tied into the larger overall story problem that everybody's dealing with? Like, that keeps things fresh and keeps it alive and makes it quite apparent that the Dramatica take on story is universal, and regardless of decade, regardless of what story you're trying to tell, if you'd like a more objective view of how narrative works, this is what you should actually go about learning. It also forces me to learn something new, especially the last 4 weeks with that generating dramatic tension within each act. You know, the plotting your story with Dramatica series, going through that entire thing, it's really challenged me to explore different examples. Like, I'd never really looked into Sideways as much as I did, or LA Confidential, and being forced to do that, it actually teaches me more about the theory than I ever knew before. And of course, it's the whole thing about, you know, if you want to learn something, try teaching somebody else about it, which is something else I did, where I went to the California Institute of the Arts. And I actually taught story there for 8 years and basically just taught them the Dramatica theory of story. If you want to learn Dramatica, the best way to do it is to learn as much as you can. And I'll give you lots of different articles that you can start out with and read and try and start to develop your own understanding of it. But the best way to learn is then try to communicate it to somebody else and try to explain it to them. They will try to plug holes in it or try to say, well, I don't know, how can you determine who the protagonist or antagonist of a story is if you're not really sure where you're looking at? And then you can give them, you know, well, the context and what's the actual story that you're going on. I'm referring to the whole James Bond is not the antagonist nonsense that we talked about last week. So in 2013, we switched to narrative first. In 2016, I took the business full-time. Prior to that, it was my side hustle, doing it on the side, trying to build up as much as I can. And in 2016, I decided to take it full-time, and I haven't looked back. And we've been able to help out with the Disney animated television series Tangled, novelist Sebastian DeCastell looks to us for help on stories, getting some of his stories, trying to mess around with the different structure and explore different possibilities of how he could lay out his novels, which are fantastic. And developing series for potential shows on HBO, which is super exciting. I can't wait till that actually happens, and I can put that in the list of things to say, hey, we actually helped out with that. And writing our own animated features. And it just keeps going on and on. December of 2009, I sat down and wrote this article, Writing Complete Stories, which went through and explained why everybody loves the Pixar films and why everybody struggles with films from other studios. The difference is clear. Every single Pixar film is a complete story. It has all those four through lines that I talked about. The main character, influence character, overall story, and relationship story through lines. It has those four different perspectives in each and every film. Prior to December 2009, I would write articles, but maybe one a month, one every 3 weeks. There wasn't really a set schedule, and that's what I refer to as the vault. So while they may not be as well thought out as perhaps a lot of the articles, they still provide a nice foundation and a beginning point for people new to Dramatica to actually go through and learn the theory. The key important one that I think is great is the vault article, What Character Arc Really Means. From 2009. And just recently, I discovered that I had never put up the montage video of Steadfast Characters that goes with this article that I had created for my classes at CalArts. So I have attached that to there. And it's a really short article, and it describes this idea of the difference between a change and a Steadfast Characters. And the montage video there actually, you know, gives you a great introduction to characters who stay true to themselves throughout the course of a story and end up changing people around them. The main character of a story does not have to fundamentally change their point of view. Some grow by maintaining their resolve against all odds. That would be the first place I would start. The second place I would go to would be two sides of the same coin. And here, the tagline is, the cliche of the century finds roots in human psychology. And here we have the You and I compilation that I didn't put together, but Chris Huntley put together and continually changes from time to time as he finds new instances of You and I. And this is a line of dialogue that you will find in many complete stories. And again, it goes back to that idea of the main character and influence character representing different points of view. And so when somebody says, you and I are both alike, and the other person says, oh, I'm nothing alike, that is the discussion between two competing perspectives on how to solve a problem. And it's the easiest way to present the difference between the main character and influence character through line. And so there is a compendium of really great films and really horrible films, really cheesy versions of You and I, and really great versions of You and I that you will find in that article, Two Sides of the Same Coin. And I came up with that title. I remember I'm a huge Deadwood fan, huge David Milch fan, who would probably hate Dramatica if he ever knew about it and would be disgusted by it. He's of the opinion that you should just write and tie into that whole inner voice thing, which I'm sure exists. He spoke about the difference between Bullock and Swearengen and how they are two sides of the same coin, which I thought was great. I was like, oh, he's basically describing main character and influence character. And throughout the series, Swearengen, I believe, is the main character and Bullock is the influence character. There's different episodes where they switch, but the fact that they really represent two different ways of approaching problems in Deadwood itself, and how one eventually changes to the other, even though they got cut off short. Although, hopefully, I think they are supposed to do a movie. But that's where the title for that came from, Two Sides of the Same Coin. Then there was a series of articles on meaningful endings. Now, you can also find collections of articles that have the same topic. For the articles, you know, the ones after 09, you'll find them in articles/series, and I'll give links to all this stuff. For the Vault, you'll find them under Vault Compilation, and that's where you'll find all the Vault articles that are put together into a single category, a single compilation. And the one that I really had fun putting together for my students was Meaningful Endings that I put together during the summer of 09, where I went through and showed the difference between a triumph, a personal triumph, a personal tragedy, and a tragedy. And it's funny because in Chris Huntley's weekend workshops, he would always start with the tragedies and end with the triumphs. And I would always start with the triumphs and end with the tragedies because I just felt it was much more fun to go from Top Gun, which was the example that I would use of the ultimate triumph, to Seven. You can be my wingman anytime. Bullshit, you can be mine. Right? I don't know if I'll be doing that this time. So a great introduction to the combination of the story outcome and story judgment is our Vault compilation of meaningful endings. And you'll find that at narrativefirst.com/vault/compilation/meaningful-endings. Another great article from the Vault is A Case of the Missing Heart. And this was my section on relationship story through line at CalArts, where I went through Nightmare Before Christmas and showed how there virtually is no relationship story whatsoever. You'll have main character, which is Jack's bits, and then you'll have the influence character, which is Sally's bits. But anytime they actually get together and actually could have some kind of relationship, somebody comes by and interrupts them. And it isn't until the very end of the story that they actually finally come together. And the problem is, then you don't have a relationship story through line. You're actually missing one of those key perspectives, and it makes it an incomplete story. That article, Writing Complete Stories, is about how Pixar always has those four through lines in every complete story. The main character, influence character, relationship story, and overall story. And Nightmare Before Christmas is a great example of what happens when you leave one of them out, a relationship story. And the overall feeling is that it's very cold because you're missing that heart line. The overall story is the headline of the story, and the relationship story is the heart line. So if you're missing that heart line, the story itself has no heart. So you really have nothing to feel. So when they come together at the end, it's like, okay, well, I guess you are supposed to come together. But it's not like I'm not crying. I don't feel anything there. And so this article, A Case of the Missing Heart, explains, along with the video montage, every single interaction that they have and every deficient interaction they have because they never actually come together. Another key one is a story is an argument, where, again, there is a 2-3 minute video compilation, and this was me explaining the difference between a tale and a story. And Dramatica makes a difference between a tale and a story. A tale is something that just relates this happened, then this happened, and then this happened, and there really isn't any other meaning except how the ending relates to the beginning. Where you started and where you ended. That's it. Okay? Take it or leave it. Whereas a story makes a complete argument. That's why you have those 4 through lines, because it's actually going through and arguing all the different ways that you could actually approach this problem, and it's making a case for one over the other. And the key here is, though, for a narrative to enjoy lasting meaning, an argument must form the foundation of its structure. So those films that last, and those stories that last, those plays, those novels, everything that lasts, is because they actually offer those 4 perspectives. We were talking again last night about how those 4 perspectives match different ways of looking at a problem. So the overall story is the they perspective, the main character is the I perspective, relationship story is the we perspective, and the influence character is the you perspective. And if you're taking the I perspective, you can look at I, you, or we, but you can never look at they in your real life. And if you look at they, you're looking at other people's problems, you can look at they, we, and you, but you can't look at I. And the reason why complete stories last as long as they do and why people can watch them over and over again is because you're getting something that you can't get in real life, which is meaning. You actually get to see how things work and get some kind of meaning out of it. And you get that because you're seeing both the I and the they within the same context, within the same piece of work. Another fun one that I liked was stories are like birthday cake. In my weekend workshop classes, I would do the example of chocolate, which I totally cribbed from Chris. He would used to do this all the time, where you get everybody some chocolate and you ask them to describe how it tastes, how great it is, how wonderful, and they get that subjective sort of experience to it. And then you ask them, how do they actually make the chocolate? And then they kind of like, wait, what? And this is speaking about Dramatica's take on story. Whereas, you know, like McKee and other screenwriting gurus and paradigms, they tell you how great a cake tastes. And, well, this cake is really good here and tastes really good. But they really don't know the actual ingredients that go into it. Dramatica tells you all the ingredients, tells you exactly all the different things you have to choose from, all the different spices and sugars and coatings and every last thing you wanted to know about the ingredients that goes into it. It's going to give you a kind of a feeling of how it might taste with some of those audience appreciations, with like the meaningful endings where, you know, if you combine the story outcome and story judgment, you'll get a certain take on it. But it won't necessarily tell you exactly how it's going to taste. So while one side will tell you the experience of eating a cake, the other one will describe the process of making that cake. And Dramatica is all about making the cake. So you want to check that one out. It's a very short one. Stories are like birthday cake. And then finally, Dramatica Simplified. And even when you first get into Dramatica, it can be extremely complicated. There can be all kinds of different things that go into it. And you want to make sure that, all right, there's so many concepts, there's so many different things, how can I keep my head on straight? And really, if you just stick with the 8 dynamic questions, which are the first 4 are character questions, and the second 4 are plot dynamics, if you just stick with those and take a very simplistic way of looking at them, you'll get a great idea of actually how Dramatica works, and you'll have a great foundation from which to build from. So I'll go through these, and I won't talk about Dramatica story structure or the actual story points, but truth and point, I'm actually talking about Dramatica theory. So if you know Dramatica, see if you can figure out which appreciation I'm talking about. If you don't, think about your own story and see if you actually are putting this into your story, and if not, maybe start thinking about how you can. So number 1, there are 2 major characters in your story, one who will significantly change his worldview and one who will stand his ground. And of course, it could be his or her. Point number 2, one of these characters will like to build things, use their hands, and get things done. The other would rather change themselves or act a different way. So think of that difference. Point number 3, one will want to find how things fit together while the other would prefer to solve problems. That one's interesting. Point number 4, in your story, you will have good guys and bad guys. In some stories, the good guys win. In other stories, the good guys lose and the bad guys win. That one's pretty easy. Number 5, the people you are rooting for will feel like they are running out of time or running out of options. Again, it doesn't matter. Just keep it consistent and don't change it halfway through. That one's an easy one to figure out. Number 6, your story will either have major events that happen to these characters or they themselves will decide to take action. Both will be in there, both those different kinds of events. but one will feel stronger than the other. And actually, one will lead to the other one happening, kind of like a cause and effect sort of thing. Number 7, the character you care about the most will either be at peace at the end of your story, or he, she will still feel at odds with the world around them. And a great thing we learned last night, which is, probably should change it, is either they're either going to feel better or they're going to feel worse about things. And number 8, this same character will grow throughout the story by trying something new or by discarding an old trait. And hint, that has everything to do with the main character growth. So that's it for this first introductory podcast on Dramatica and Narrative First. Hope you enjoyed the history of where Dramatica came from and how Narrative First came to be. In our second introductory podcast episode, we'll go through all the different articles that you'll want to read through and get a better idea of how Dramatica works. If you have any questions about anything or you'd like to learn more about Dramatica, please contact us at narrativefirst.com/contact. Have a great week of writing, and we'll see you next time.